Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
George, you've heard about this virus? Shall I cough on you, George?
That was a good one.
Yeah, that's from a classic film.
Definitely. I actually know where that comes
from. Oh, yeah? Wow, yeah. I can't believe you've seen that one.
I haven't. I just know where it comes from.
Oh, all right. Well, we're going to launch directly into a little listener mail. This listener mail comes from Patrick, who says, "Dear Tech Stuff, I really think an appropriate topic for discussion would be the infamous Stuxnet that has been all over the news these past few months. Thank you, and I hope to hear more from you guys." Well, Patrick, we thought we'd tackle Stuxnet, too. We've talked about it a couple of times in other podcasts, just kind of mentioning it offhand, and of course we've done podcasts about viruses and worms before, but the Stuxnet is a particularly interesting form of malware.
Yes. It is, in fact, a worm. One of the reasons it's so interesting is because it is extremely complex.
Yes.
It seems to be targeted at a specific purpose, and if not a specific purpose, a specific location.
Yes.
And no one officially knows where it came from.
Right.
Somebody knows.
But it does also seem to be a state-sponsored virus, or at least some department in some country appears to be responsible for it, based upon the various investigations that have gone on since the discovery of Stuxnet.
Yeah. Now, it's important to note that we have to be careful when we talk about that, because we don't know for sure. And as we have mentioned many times before, probably most notably in our hacking of Google in China discussions that we've had before, it is possible to make an attack look like it came from someone it didn't.
Yes.
And that will come up later in our discussion, too. But, it appears that way. But there's really no way to tell for sure. And we've had some very dedicated computer security experts looking into this.
Yes.
So some seriously talented people have been evaluating the Stuxnet worm and have been unable to determine that for sure.
Right.
So do you want to should we start? I guess this really all started back in 2009, as far as we know.
Yes, yes. So let's give a brief overview of what Stuxnet is and what it's meant to do.
Okay.
So Stuxnet is a worm. It
yes.
is a Windows-based worm.
Yes.
So it doesn't target Linux. It doesn't target Mac OS. It targets machines running various forms of the Windows operating system.
That's right.
And as far as we are able to determine it by the time of this recording, it originally spread through USB sticks or USB drives.
Yes, it is not propagated primarily over the internet.
Right, and the reason for that is because the intended target of Stuxnet that tends to be disconnected from the internet. So mm-hmm. you can't target it from the internet. That specific target is, well, Stuxnet is able to attack factory systems.
Yes. It actually targets a series of vulnerabilities in the Windows operating system, which I understand have been patched at this time.
Right.
But, at the time the Stuxnet virus was written, or the original one was written, it was aimed at several vulnerabilities and used those vulnerabilities to get at industrial control systems for gas pipelines and power plants.
Right. And
so it's aimed at very specific hardware connected to Windows networks.
And in fact, the ultimate target for this turned out to be some centrifuges in Iranian nuclear facilities.
Mm-hmm.
So these were centrifuges that were designed to process uranium.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea here apparently was to infect systems so that an outside controller could gain access to the systems and overload them in such a way as to cause possibly irreparable damage
mm-hmm.
to the facilities. Now, as it turns out, that does not seem to have happened. It doesn't look like the damage was as devastating as it could have been. And there's some interesting explanations for why that is, one of which is that some security experts have said Stuxnet is kind of like a double-layer worm.
Yes.
The core of which is incredibly complex, one
yes.
of the most sophisticated worms possible. But the outer layer of which is less complex,
mm-hmm.
and that because of the reduced complexity, this is the layer that's specifically designed to help hide Stuxnet from prying eyes and discovery. Because it was less sophisticated, it was not as difficult to discover, although it took an entire year before anyone saw it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so hard to discover that it is impossible to weed it out.
Mm-hmm.
So if the outer layer had been as sophisticated as the inner layer, it may even be that we still would not know what Stuxnet is.
Right.
So infecting, the idea here is that you send in some sort of infected USB media, whether that's a USB stick or an external drive or some other device that could contain the Stuxnet code in it, connect it to a computer that's within this network that's not connected to the internet necessarily. Or maybe there's like a couple of machines on the periphery that are connected to the internet, but the main machines aren't. You infect the machine within that network, then the worm spreads within inside that network until it hits those critical systems that are connected to the factory environment.
Right. Now, I read an interview with security expert Ralph Langner,
mm-hmm.
Who spoke with Eleanor Mills of CNET. And Langner said a good way to get this virus in place would be to infect one of the contractors who worked with these power systems.
Right.
So a contractor, in this case, a trusted business partner. Hey, can you come in and fix this machine? So if you can infect somebody else and have, their machines or a USB drive and have them take the virus in on foot with a USB stick and put it on a computer inside the power plant, then this person who already had clearance is, you know, you don't have to worry about getting it into the impregnable.
Yeah, you don't have to do a Mission Impossible type thing to get in there and plant this stuff.
You can use a lower point of security for that.
Right.
And the reason he thinks that, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, please. Please.
The reason he thinks that, based on my readings of his theory, there were other countries that were infected too, including Indonesia, India, and Pakistan, who all used this one same contractor, a Russian contractor, who worked on the Bushehr nuclear power plant in Iran. So the same contractor worked at all of those places, and Stuxnet surfaced in all of those locations.
Right.
So I think based on that,
you've got he's thinking, zero.
Yeah, I mean that's a logical idea.
Yeah.
So I think based on that information, he said, well, you know what? I bet that's how they did it.
And the goal here is that at least one of those machines within that network has to have some sort of connection to the internet. If it doesn't, then you cannot control from outside the network. You cannot control what's going on inside the factory.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, the factory systems themselves are not connected to the internet. There's a gap there. It's air gap is what it's often called.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you can get control of the network that is in turn connected to the factory systems, you have the opportunity to infect them. And what's interesting is the original version of Stuxnet required used auto run to initiate itself.
Mm-hmm.
But you can turn auto run off on your machine.
That's correct.
So if you are let's say you work for a facility where security is a major concern, you may have a policy that auto run must be disabled. So that way no malware that uses auto run would automatically upload itself to your system.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next generation of Stuxnet, which by the way, the first two generations of Stuxnet were deployed before we ever knew that they existed. Anyone not connected to the scheme had no idea they existed. We didn't know they existed until, was it July of 2010? Or 2009.
2009 is when it first showed up, but they think it could have been out in the wild and looking for targets I shouldn't say that because we were just saying that it doesn't spread over the internet. It was available and ready to go as possibly even a year earlier, but they don't know for sure.
Right. Well, essentially a full year had passed since it had been first deployed and when it was first discovered.
That's true. Yeah, they first spotted it in the summer of 2009.
Well, the later generations used a vulnerability in LNK, which allows the exploit to essentially install itself. Basically what happens is you plug your USB stick that happens to be infected with the Stuxnet virus into your computer. And then you decide to use Explorer to look at what is on that memory stick. Just by using Explorer to open up the memory stick, you have that's all it takes for Stuxnet to then infect that computer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your basic computer, like you guys out there who are using your computers, Stuxnet would not do anything to your machine. You wouldn't get any, you know, you're not being spied on. You're not being your computer's not going to start acting weird. The whole purpose of Stuxnet is to affect these factory systems, not individual users' computers.
Yes, and in fact, it's looking specifically for a Siemens Simatic WinCC Step 7 software.
And most
package.
Of us don't have that.
No, I don't. I don't have it on my Windows installation.
No, it's not even in Minecraft.
Nice.
So, yeah, if you don't have that, then it's not going to target you. But if you are running a very large system like a water facility, power facility, nuclear power facility, which, of course, that was the main target, then you'd have to be concerned about this. And the other part of this that was really interesting is that, like Chris said, it targeted several vulnerabilities, not just one.
Right.
Your typical virus or worm, especially if it's developed by someone who just – you know, knows enough to get into trouble, but not like enough to make a really sophisticated tool. Those tend to target a single vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
But Stuxnet was much more sophisticated, and it used a series of vulnerabilities to spread itself. The one of the other things that the reasons why it was able to install itself without checking for a certificate is because it stole certificates.
Yes, and that's another interesting point too, because originally it had used an official certificate.
Yes.
That had been stolen, and they revoked that certificate, and it surfaced very shortly thereafter with another
official certificate.
Yes, exactly. So it appears to be completely legit.
And the two certificates came from two companies that exist within a few miles of each other in Taiwan.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting, huh? So that suggests that someone, you know, maybe another contractor, was specifically stealing electronic certificates from from companies in order to mask this stuff. And that's the thing, is that if you've told your computer if your network administrator has told all the computers to trust software that comes from a particular source and it bears that certificate, then there's no reason for the computer to say, hey, I see you're trying to upload Stuxnet. Are you sure you want to continue?
Thanks, Clippy.
Yeah. I see you're trying to bring down the system from within. Do you need help with that?
And when I'm trying to think of something to say, don't.
Sorry.
Now, and that's funny that you mentioned the Taiwanese connection. Mm-hmm. Because when Stuxnet is in operation, it actually tries to make contact with two control servers in Malaysia and Denmark. And it does use a peer-to-peer scheme to compare versions of itself and update to the most recent version. So it is checking. It may not necessarily have an internet connection, but if it can find other versions of itself on the intranet where it is located, it will try the versions will try to update themselves to the most current version to take advantage of any vulnerabilities that might be available to it. And this is, I mean, it's really fascinating stuff. I also read another article with security expert Bruce Schneier, who some of you might have heard of, actually. He's a pretty outspoken guy. You know, information suggests that, may have infected as many as 100,000 or even more computers worldwide. But about 60% of that was in Iran.
Yes. Which suggests that Iran was, in fact, the target.
Mm-hmm. And specifically, Ralph Langer had found, and his partners at his firm, had found data structures in the Natanz facility in Iran that specifically matched the Stuxnet code. So it is possible that it was aimed at that particular facility. And, you know, in particular,
yeah,
that was totally redundant. I'm sorry.
And repetitive. But let me reiterate. There was a there were several articles. The Telegraph and New York Times have published articles that suggest that facility in particular was the target.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea here is that it was an effort to disrupt Iran's nuclear program.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like I said, the idea was that you would make the centrifuges that are processing the uranium in these facilities to spin too fast and to essentially break them.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really fascinating to me is that Stuxnet wasn't just designed to go there and just immediately ramp everything up.
Mm-hmm.
It actually would analyze the operations of the facility for several days for two reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One, to determine what would be the most disruptive course of action.
Right.
So, in other words, if the centrifuges are turning at a certain number of revolutions per second, how many more does it need for it to be the perfect amount to be disastrous without immediately setting off all the alarms?
Right.
The second was that the reason it was observing for several days was to create a kind of partitioned system. So that when people are looking at their monitors and are trying to upload code to fix the problem, that it all is it's all segregated from those factory systems. So if you're looking at the screen, if you're an engineer looking at your screen trying to fix the problem, what you see looks like the problem's fixed.
Mm-hmm.
That the code you've uploaded has gone in and that's been incorporated and that's taken care of the problem. But in reality, those centrifuges are still spinning like crazy.
Right.
And that was the really clever thing. It's the idea of, like, you pull this mask down, or you shield what's really happening, and all the monitoring systems don't show that anything's going wrong at all. That's pretty devious.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another reason why security experts call this a very sophisticated attack, because it wasn't just that it was able to infect systems, efficiently. It was able to mask that infection somewhat. And it also involved a rootkit. So if you've listened to our rootkit podcast, there was a rootkit element to this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a pretty neat idea. And a lot of the attribution for this, as we said, we still don't know for sure who did it.
No.
Right? But if you do research on it, and you start looking around at articles that were published this year, you'll see that there's some common elements popping up, that at least one Western power was involved in this,
mm-hmm.
and that Israel was involved in it.
Yeah, so a lot of fingers initially pointed to the United States government.
Right.
Which is
still a possibility.
Which is, yeah.
As is the British government.
Bruce Schneier, it's so hard to say, Bruce Schneier said that he thinks that around 8 to 10 people spent about 6 months, maybe a little longer, on creating this. They think that Israel is mentioned. I read one article from Schneier that suggested – it had a number of references in it.
Yeah.
There are bits of code that have dates in them that appear to be
– Yes.
Dates, important dates in
Iranian-Israeli relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
in an incredibly negative way. We're talking like dates of assassinations.
Yes.
And things of that
and
nature.
And things like that. Some people have said that they just happened to be the code that you needed to get that done.
Right.
The particular function in the software done, and it just so happened to end up like that.
Which is possible.
Which is completely possible.
Yeah. If you've ever seen any of those theories, any numerology theory,
mm-hmm.
where they say, this number is significant because blah, 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 a lot of that ends up being confirmation bias, which is that's a logical fallacy. That's when you look at something and you count all the hits and you ignore all the misses.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that this is another case of that. So we have to keep that in mind, too.
Yeah, I don't suggest ignoring the misses, because she's going to get really angry with you.
Well, she's going to be gone for a week, so I can't really pay attention to her anyway.
Joking aside, though, I have a quote from Schneier who said, quote, whoever wrote Stuxnet was willing to spend a lot of money to ensure that whatever job it was intended to do would be done, end quote.
Yeah.
So it's a professional job. It's not something that script kiddies, which are, hackers who do this for the fun of hacking and not for a monetary purpose or for bringing down governments or the high level hacking. People who are doing it for fun. This is not a casual hacking project. This
no.
is something serious.
The amount of code was something like 1.5 megabytes, which is actually huge for a worm.
Yeah, it really is.
Because worms and viruses tend to be very tiny bits of code. Just like you can imagine a virus, a virus that can affect an organism is very tiny. Well, typically your viruses that affect computers tend to be tiny too.
Mm-hmm.
They might be a tiny part of a larger program, and the larger program's design, but the larger program is just an infection method.
Mm-hmm.
It's not actually part of the virus or worm necessarily.
Yeah.
Another article I saw that may point to Israel as being a potential source for this attack, and again, we don't know for sure, was in the New York Times. It published on January 15th, and it's called "Israeli Test on Worm Called Crucial in Iran Nuclear Delay."
Mm-hmm.
And in this article, the writers state that Israel has this nuclear facility in Dimona,
mm-hmm.
that one of those facilities is designed to be essentially a copy of the main target in Iran.
Oh, right. I remember that article.
And the idea here is that just because you create something that can infect a factory system doesn't mean that you can, really wreak havoc, because you need to know how the machines within that facility work.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, we're talking about the centrifuges. So they had a facility using the same centrifuge technology that the Iranian facility was using, so that in theory they could test the Stuxnet worm out to make sure that it would be effective and that they could indeed control these centrifuges from, you know, a remote location. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, these are, again, these are all allegations and theories. So,
well, I think if I'm not mistaken, that's the article by William J. Broad, John Markoff, and David E. Sanger.
Yes.
And yeah, they added that Siemens. Remember, I said that was a specific Siemens controller and software that mm-hmm. it targets. Mm-hmm. Siemens had done had cooperated with the United States government on some research on that kind of equipment, on the equipment used in the Iranian nuclear program. Mm-hmm. So that just adds fuel to the fire. Now, I mean, again, this could all be coincidence. These things happen. Siemens makes a lot of different kinds of industrial equipment that's used all over the world. So, you know, you could say that, and it you know, I don't think that's anything that is a definitive finger pointing at the United States government involved in that. And personally, if it were me and I were trying to do something like this, I wouldn't want anything that even revealed this. In fact, I would want to obfuscate. I would try to cover up or maybe point the finger at someone else, which is why I agree with the people who say that those little hints that might be in the code that seem to point to Israel. If I were trying to blame somebody, I would try to blame somebody that would be an obvious target for that kind of attention.
Yeah,
and Israel would be obviously interested in discontinuing Iranian's nuclear program. So if I were, you know, Antarctica, I picked that because it's not a government that's likely to do that, and it's run by penguins.
Right, but penguins are very much anti-nuke.
They are. So, yeah, I mean, if another country wanted to disable that and I were running that country, I would say, let's point the finger at someone else. Throw some red herrings in the code to make it look like it's these guys over here and not me. So I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I can't imagine that you would want – and something this sophisticated – why would you want anything that would attract attention to yourself as the creator of this worm?
Why would you create a system that could, in theory, reset itself at the year 2000?
Well,
I'm just saying, sometimes people aren't as smart as we give them credit for. I totally agree that your argument is valid. I mean, we cannot leap to the conclusion that this is necessarily the source of the attack.
Yeah, I don't mean to sound like I've reached conclusions.
Right.
It seems illogical to me to point the finger at yourself. I think that if anything, it's probably code that needed to be there in order to make the software work rather than hints to that. So
I actually think it's all due to aliens in Roswell.
Yeah, it's possible.
That's who did it. And they got so ticked off. What happened was they finally got Independence Day and they said, what? Taking us down with a virus written on an Apple computer, no less. We'll show you.
An Apple computer from the dark ages of Apple computer, too.
Right. So maybe we should talk about the fact that that you may have heard on the news about hackers releasing a decrypted version of Stuxnet code.
Okay.
That happened.
Okay. I hadn't realized that. The only other thing I was going to add was that Stuxnet is designed to become inactive on June 24th, 2012.
Yes, it actually does have an expiration date.
Which is kind of funny. So if you try the Stuxnet after that point, it may make you a little sick to your stomach.
Right. So that you may have heard, again, like I said, that hackers have released this decrypted code, which on its surface, if that's all you hear, you think, wow, that's scary, because now this incredibly sophisticated weapon that was designed by people who apparently really knew what they were doing has just been distributed around the world for mm-hmm. free, and mm-hmm. now we're going to see chaos reign. Well, there's a couple things you need to keep in mind. One is that a lot of the vulnerabilities that Stuxnet initially targeted have been patched since
yes.
then.
I read that all of them have been patched.
Oh, have they? Okay. So, yeah, the latest information I had was a couple of months old. So at the time when it was written, there was still one remaining to be patched. But I would imagine by that time, that has happened.
Well, frankly, another indication that this is written by somebody very sophisticated is, as one of the security researchers point out, Vulnerabilities are something that true hackers prize. Once you have a hole in the code that you know about and hasn't been patched yet, that's your ticket to generating something, a successful attack. And the fact that they had multiple vulnerabilities targeted sort of suggests that these people were not fooling around.
Right.
I mean, that's – we're talking several opportunities to make a dent in the nuclear program of Iran. So,
well, getting back to the hackers, just really briefly.
Yes, please.
First of all, can you take a wild guess at who at the name of the group of hackers that stole this information?
Does it start with an A?
It does.
Does it end with it? Anonymous?
Yes, it does. So it's our.
And that was a guess too.
It's the group Anonymous, the group that has some connections to other internet or websites, things like 4chan.
Mm-hmm.
But Anonymous has sort of become like internet vigilantes, and they band together and they enact what they see as virtual justice on targets that they perceive as being antithetical to what the values they hold there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when WikiLeaks was under under fire and was starting to get support yanked out from under it, financial support from various companies, then Anonymous began to target those companies and mm-hmm. really hit them hard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this case, they targeted a security company called HB Gary.
Mm-hmm.
And they stole a decrypted version of the Stuxnet virus. Now, this means that you could actually study the Stuxnet virus. It's not a kind version of the virus where you would be able to actually infect a computer. It's more so that you can study it and see how it took advantage of these vulnerabilities. And it was really meant for academic purposes. And HB Gary actually points out that if you want a truly dangerous version of Stuxnet, it's already out there. You don't have to steal it from a security company. You just mm-hmm. have to find a computer infected with it, and then you reverse engineer it. You
right.
get the binary code. You get the raw code for Stuxnet. You don't get a translated version. So you may have heard about this anonymous attack. It's definitely a embarrassing story for HB Gary, because that's it's a computer security firm, and they had their system compromised. So that's the real big part of the story.
Sure.
Is the fact that something that was on their systems was able to Anonymous was able to get access to it and spread it around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual version of Stuxnet that Anonymous distributed was not the kind that's going to plunge the world into some sort of virtual warfare.
Right.
Now, we're probably seeing the end of Stuxnet's true effectiveness in the field as long as companies realize the dangers of Stuxnet and they update their systems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they make sure they have the latest security patches that plug those holes that Stuxnet took advantage of. So, I mean, there is definitely some measures companies and governments have to take in order to remain safe. It's not like you automatically become safe just because this hole was patched. You have to install the patch, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Stuxnet is probably starting to wind down for the most part just because everyone's aware of it. However, it probably also marks the beginning of some serious cyber warfare, stuff that goes beyond the level of a small group of hackers who share a particular philosophy and they all aim their efforts at a single target. This may be the mark of some pretty serious warfare tactics,
mm-hmm.
not out and out warfare either, but subversion tactics to really take advantage and cripple companies or countries' infrastructures.
Well, it is interesting too that something that appears to have been so targeted for a specific purpose, it did leak over and damage other systems too. I mean, there is the possibility I read that India's INSAT-4B, which failed in July 2010, may have been due to a Stuxnet infection.
Mm.
It did spread around the world. So it is possible that that it caused a lot of collateral damage in the process of taking out its original target. And their estimates do suggest that Iran's nuclear program has been set back for years as a result of the Stuxnet infection.
It's interesting.
Assuming that it was the intended target, which it seems to have been.
Right. It all depends on the source you look at, because I looked at several where there were some sources that said, yeah, this problem has really set the Iranian program back by a few years. But that all seemed to be statements from other governments' representatives, whereas I also saw claims that said that Iran managed to produce the same amount of uranium, essentially weapons-grade uranium, by at the end of the year as it had the year previous.
Mm-hmm.
And so it didn't ramp up production. Production had not increased year over year, but it hadn't set it back to the point where it was making less than it had before.
Right.
So that suggests that, you know, any setbacks that Iran encountered were temporary in nature. So it all depends on who you ask and you know, who you believe.
Yeah. And it may be difficult to know because Iran is not known for being completely transparent with its nuclear program.
And other governments aren't known for, you know, shooting straight when talking about that. It may pay politically to underplay something.
Right.
So what's the truth?
It's difficult to know, but it is a fascinating subject.
Yes.
I mean, just because we've talked about viruses and worms and all kinds of other malware, and this is a different kind of malware.
Yeah. And we may see more attempts at that hackers try and take to try and take advantage of multiple vulnerabilities within the same operating system environment, just because it's been proven to be really effective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, using that multi-pronged attack means that your attack's going to be much more efficient, and it's going to be harder to prevent just through a single patch.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's kind of scary. Fortunately, like I said, the Stuxnet virus itself is not going to directly impact you unless the worst should happen.
Right.
Let's hope that doesn't come to pass.
And again, this is a reminder always to patch your computer with the latest security updates, no matter what operating system you're running, and back up your hard drive, because eventually something will come after you.
Right. Yeah. Like my wife.
See? That's what happens when you ignore her.
Yeah. She'll come back.
Don't ignore the missus.
Yeah. Woman scorned. All right. So we're going to wrap this up. Guys, if you have any other questions about Stuxnet or you have any topic suggestions you would like to shoot us, let us know on Twitter and Facebook. That handle is TechStuffHSW, or you can email us. That email address is TechStuff@HowStuffWorks.com, and Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedena. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.